us down or top us ready.
Hello everyone and welcome to the Ramblecast. Today is a very different episode than usual. Instead of a conversation between me and my friends like usual, you're going to hear a year-old interview with, I'm sorry if I screw his name up, Brian Sigurdsson of Image and Form Games. Image and Form developed SteamWorld Dig, they're currently developing SteamWorld Heist, and before all that they did SteamWorld Tower Defense and a game called Anthill. This interview goes over some of the history of their development, a lot of what they were doing with SteamWorld Dig, and some of the setting in regards to their other games. There's not a lot of information here. In fact, there's pretty much no information here about SteamWorld Heist at all. And you'll also hear us discuss, you know, platforms that SteamWorld Dig wasn't on yet, but are currently on now. As I said, this interview was a year old. It was intended to be a feature for Gamers with Jobs or something. And unfortunately, I was unable to really pull that together into an effective feature. And I did want to share it because there's a lot of interesting information here. I would love to have Brian on the show again, or his partner Julius, both of them, you know, heading up Steam Image and Form. I'm sorry. I would love to have them on the show again, but you know, they're awfully busy working on SteamWorld Heist. So until then, here is an interview that, yes, it's a year old, so it's a little outdated. We can't mention certain things because at the time they hadn't announced SteamWorld Heist, but I think there's still a lot of worthwhile information to listen to. Apologies as well that I tried to edit as best as I could, but Brian did have, he had kids at home and he had some interference that I was not able to get rid of. So you might not want to have the podcast really loud or in a setting where you have to listen to it at a high volume. Because there's some sounds I just could not edit out. Sorry about that. Anyways, I hope you enjoy. So the first thing I wanted to ask about is with your SteamWorld games, and then you had a game called Mariachi Hero, it seems you take a lot of interest and inspiration from the Wild West and Westerns and stuff like that. I wanted to know, like, where does that come from exactly? Like, why the Wild West?
Yeah, well, that's a really interesting question. I've never thought about it like that, but I guess you sort of grew up with, for you guys, you know, cowboys and Indians are sort of part of your history, and maybe it's not, maybe that makes it sort of less interesting than we think. We think it's just super exotic here in Sweden. So when we were kids, we were just playing cowboys and Indians the whole time, and the guy who got to be one of the Cartwright brothers was probably the coolest guy on the block. So I think the Western things and movies and so on, they've always been very interesting to us.
Now, again, like, the SteamWorld universe does take place in a wild Western theme, but it's also post-apocalyptic, and there's the steampunk element with the robots and everything. So in previous interviews, you've mentioned that you like to fuse game genres and stuff. Is that also part of the setting? Like, you like to fuse the narrative settings, kind of a sense, and genres?
You know, that's a really good question, too. And I'm glad you're so prepared. It's something that we actually really want to do with every game that we make, that we want to sort of mix and mash up things and then see what works. I don't know if you've seen a game called Anthill that we made. That was maybe the first example where we decided to take tower defense ideas or castle defense and mix it up.
You said Anthill, right?
With line drawing. Yeah. All Anthill. Right, yeah. It's one of the games that we made for mobile, and because we were so impressed with a small game called Flight Control, where it really used the iPhone or the iPads, the touch input to do these lines, this line drawing. So we really wanted to do that, just mix genres, and it worked out really well. And then we thought it would be so interesting to sort of mix up genres for SteamWorld Dig as well. But then also the setting is, we thought that's logically... the SteamWorld era and the Wild West, they almost coincide in time. And so we thought, if everything sort of stops right there and the robots sort of go about their business, then maybe that's what the world would have looked like if they hadn't advanced past that point. So mixing those settings, it was more that we thought that they should really occur at the same time, roughly. But I think steampunk sort of originated in England and the Wild West, obviously in the U.S. So maybe it's a geographical mix up there.
Well, it is interesting because usually steampunk is tied into Victorian era fancy stuff. But you're right; it does actually seem like it would make a lot of sense, kind of a thing. Let's see. Now to shift a little bit, I did want to ask real quick on Mariachi Hero, where you were not familiar with some of our cultural sensitivities and other things going on with our own in America with like immigration and other things. So it was a surprise to you guys that it came off as racist, I believe I read. Now, how has that affected future development?
Well, Mariachi Hero was very interesting in one sense because it was actually work for hire. It was a publisher that asked us to develop that game, and but we weren't apprehensive at all when they told us what sort of how the characters should look and so on. So we're definitely guilty, but. We were so surprised when it came up because we were sort of, for mood boards, we were looking at old American movies and so on, and we were checking out how Mexicans were depicted, and we thought, okay, that's good. It's going to be very stereotypical, but this should sort of work.
Did it feel like you were playing to a trope rather than a stereotype?
What is a trope? Sorry.
A trope is something similar. It's I'm used to everyone knowing about TVtropes.com. It's something like right now you have some of the discussions over the damsel in distress, where it's like in a story often the hero will have this, or it's the amnesiac hero, the hero that wakes up with no memory, or you even have like Star Wars is full of tropes from like the hero's journey kind of a thing. Like Luke Skywalker, his mentor dies and he has to go on his own kind of a thing.
Yeah. It's definitely right. I mean, how should I put it? We sort of wanted to make him just as extreme, put in all the extreme Mexican attributes to that guy, and we were just, I don't know, we must have been a lot younger when we made that game because we really didn't see that coming. It was because I think we were most, the thing that surprised us the most was how that we were actually looking for the references in sort of from American TV shows or movies, and that sort of, okay, this is sort of the Mexican out in the desert kind of guy. And then it came back as, and I think it was a Slide to Play that said it's a decent game, unfortunately it's incredibly racist, and we were like, oh no. Because Swedes in general, we're so unracist. We try to sort of make a point of not being. So it was really not very thought through. So I'm still sort of ashamed about that game, actually.
Right, but when going to, like, now that you're making more games in the SteamWorld universe and you've been making SteamWorld Dig, like how has that affected, like, those games in development? Like, has the issue seemed to crop up, or has there ever been a moment where you've stopped and said, okay, maybe we should take a look back and see if this is okay, kind of a thing? Have you had to do any of that?
Sorry, can you just repeat that, Chris? I'm sorry for the... I just didn't hear you.
How has this experience now like colored your development with the future SteamWorld games and like your current projects and everything? Like, has there ever been a moment where you've had to say, "Wait a minute, let's make sure we're not crossing a line here again"? Has it affected your research and how you look into how certain things should look and appear?
Well, yes and no. It's like the no is kind of a scary no, because obviously we learned that we can't do whatever. We have to think things like that through, that we don't offend anyone with our games, because we never intend to offend anyone, and we don't see the point of offending anyone. So, but when we made SteamWorld Dig, it was just, it's like we sort of went to sleep there for a little while, because there's this one character called Lola in SteamWorld Dig, who is sort of a brothel madam. She looks, she's sort of, if you look at her,
she's a big girl.
Yeah. She's our take on this, you know, the madam who's running the brothel. And we thought it was funny, because like, why would robots even go to a brothel? What would they do there? And so it's like, okay, it'll be humoristic that way, because it'll be so absurd that people will sort of laugh at it. Then after, just when we were about to release, I sort of woke up one morning and just thought, oh God, maybe this is just really stupid. If they're going to refer back to Mariachi Hero, it's like, yeah, it's those guys who really like to poke fun. It's like, those bastards are at it again. And I thought, oh God, no, please. But there hasn't been any of that. So I sort of felt lucky that way. But it was actually meant as a sort of an absurd joke that, I mean, in the beginning of the game, you find his uncle dead. It's like, how does a robot even have an uncle? And why would there be like a brothel for robots? What do they do there? Exchange oil?
All right. I actually did have a quick question, jumping back to Ant Hill. I imagine at this point, was there ever consideration to put that on the DS or 3DS for Ant Hill?
Yeah, well, we did have that, but I think if you play, we have some levels in that game that are just, you have to sort of complete this to, or you have to survive. Every level there is a survival level. So basically, you just want the anthill to survive every level, but there's always an objective with every level as well. So I think we could put the level packs out on the 3DS, but then we also have these endless modes where the enemies just keep piling up, and we thought that the DS or the 3DS just wouldn't be powerful enough to handle it. Otherwise, the screen is so very small, and you have to sort of draw these lines pretty accurately. And so it suits the iPad perfectly. It's a great iPad game. The iPhone is just slightly too small to sort of... people enjoy it there as well, but I think it's really good on the iPad.
All right. And possibility for Wii U? Or is it just too... Because I also imagine it's too long. Like, you're already busy with three... I believe you said you were working on three different games at the moment. So right. Porting to something like the Wii U, it would be like SteamWorld Dig. You can't port it because it's just so much going on at the moment.
That's true. I don't know how much I should say there, but we're actually discussing a Wii U version with Nintendo at the moment. So if you want to sort of sneak it out there, please feel free to do that. It's not, we haven't sort of decided that it's going to be done or how we'll do it. But we're actually talking to them right now about a Wii U version. We're always saying that we're considering the Wii U, and that's sort of lame or defensive to not sort of, we're not telling anyone what we want to do. It's like, I've always thought that the Wii U is a really powerful unit or a powerful console, but it's just that the installed user base hasn't been there, and I'm sort of, the reason why we're considering it now is we think that with Mario Kart 8 and Super Smash Bros. Coming out, I think it could be, those two games could be sort of system sellers for the Wii U, and maybe the install base will go up. And then, therefore, it could be very interesting to have SteamWorld Dig on the Wii U, and also coming games. But right, but we're discussing it with Nintendo right now. I should say that we've come before we didn't even talk to them about it. We would tell the fans that we're considering it, but sorry for getting wordy, but it's something that we wanted to do all along. We actually like the Wii U quite a bit.
So for your other games currently in development, do you have any kind of platforms you can confirm for any of them? Like, is the Wii U going to be one of them, or is it still in talks kind of a thing?
That's still in talks, but I can confirm that it's coming to the 3DS and to PC, or to Steam, meaning a PC, Mac, Linux version, and also PlayStation.
Which PlayStation, or both of them? Does it not matter?
Okay, I think we're going to go again with the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita. It's I love those platforms.
It's
really good.
So this is your next game in the lineup?
It's the next game in the lineup, but it's chronologically, it's not the next SteamWorld game. We made a game called SteamWorld Tower Defense that we released for the...
Yes, I looked at that. Yeah.
It's a very simple little game, but that's actually the main inspiration for SteamWorld Dig, because it sort of got us thinking a lot. It's like, how did this silly setting come about? Why are the robots the good guys and the humans are just lowlives? It's like we wanted to see if, and so we talked a lot about it in the office back and forth. It's like there must be some story behind this, and so we sort of invented a, I think plausible is a very strong word, but a possible sort of history where humanity actually develops a lot stronger technology earlier than we actually did. I mean, there was a big chance to do that, but the British Royal Society for Science, they sort of passed up on the idea. And so actually mechanical computers could have been developed somewhere in the middle of the 19th century, and it didn't happen. But if that had happened, then everything would have just happened much more quickly. And so we sort of got into thinking that this has happened. And so we had this universe, and it was really interesting. We thought that you could have very, very mentally very simple robots that are the things that have survived this sort of apocalypse that unfortunately happens in our story. And then, so SteamWorld Dig is probably the third game in the SteamWorld series. SteamWorld Tower Defense was the first one. So we've developed a vertical slice for the second game, which comes before SteamWorld Dig. And then we have sort of outlined games 4 and 5. But the game we're working on at the moment is game number 6, which is going to be fantastic.
All right. So chronologically, that's the second game. Or is that... Hold on. It says you're making number 6?
I'm going to explain this to you. It's like we're... So SteamWorld Tower Defense is the first game in the SteamWorld series. And it's also... We're not going to make a game that sort of takes place before that game.
All right, so that's the first chronologically.
Yeah. And then SteamWorld Dig is the third one chronologically. We have one game before SteamWorld Dig that we haven't released yet. We've developed a vertical slice of that game, and it's a lot of fun, but it was
We decided not to go all the way with it at this point because it sort of it felt small in scope, and we felt that we must come up with a huge game after SteamWorld Dig.
Okay.
And so between Dig and this game that we're going to release next, there's space for two more games in between there. So sort of like the sequel to SteamWorld Dig, and then the game that ties that story together with the game that we're releasing now.
So you've got a whole plan for this universe, basically.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do.
Oh man, I'm jumping around to questions I had written up.
Just jumping around the answers the whole time.
What occurred to me? So when you say like the humans kind of are like zombie mutant kind of things in this universe, like was that just something? It sounds like that was just something you just happened upon. Like, oh, it's a post-apocalypse, you're having robots. Like, it wasn't something that you really thought of. It was something that you just, it just, boom, there's the idea. And then you're like, oh, you know, this is interesting. Let's build on that. Is that an accurate assessment?
Yeah, that's perfectly accurate because that's how it all sort of began. We when we made SteamWorld Tower Defense, we had these... When we were designing the game, we were the whole time talking about these poor gold miners that were defending their mines against these evil robots that kept piling up. And that was, I mean, as computer games go, that's not sort of far-fetched. People don't stop to think about that. But then one day we just said, wouldn't it be more fun if it was like the robots that were the good guys and the humans were the baddies, because never seen that before. And so, yeah, it was sort of a spur of the moment decision to turn it around or to reverse the roles there. And that became so interesting, not in that game, but sort of in the discussions afterwards. It's like, how could this possibly have come about? What can't we sort of expand on this story somehow?
I was just going to say, and would you say that this decision has also helped in terms of gameplay, as robots, like, they don't have to, like, humans are humans. There's, like, a set of laws they have to follow, in a sense, in order to be something believable, but robots could be anything.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's like, that means that we're sort of forgiven the whole time for a lot of... we're making some assumptions in SteamWorld Dig and also in the coming games that you couldn't really apply those on humans because at one point someone would just say, this is pretty, that's so far-fetched or that's not even likely that this is, well, it's so far beyond likely that it's, some of the interest gets lost right there. But if you have robots, they can, and they're also, it gets even sillier that they're steam driven robots. It means that they're very old school, very mechanical. And
it's logically, technically wouldn't make sense for self-sustaining steam robots, basically. Right.
Right. Exactly. So it's, they're very simple. And how can they even perform all these, complex tasks? Is it, so we decided that they're not going to be there's going to be a lot of stuff that they don't comprehend in Dig, for example, where they're finding stuff down there but they can't really relate to it. It's just very alien to them, and it's not like they're really interested in sort of solving the mystery either. It's more of a dig up stuff to sustain the town, so the town can continue to exist. But it's sort of, at the same time, they're sort of interested in finding all these things. It's almost like you're finding godlike things in the mine. It's like, what is that movie called? The 2001, where the...
Yep, the monolith.
Yeah, the monolith and the gorillas in the beginning. It's like, what is this stuff?
That actually leads to one of my questions I had for the actual development of... the actual development of SteamWorld Dig, the final boss of SteamWorld Dig, was that always planned, or Was that something that you eventually like worked into?
Well, no, that's actually in the plan. That was that guy was always there, and he's not supposed to be a final boss. I think the end of Dig sort of very much opens up for a sequel, and so this is sort of like a first gatekeeper to this race that is running stuff far underground. But there was we actually had more content planned for the game initially. I mean, in Dig, you dig through three layers before you run into this boss. And initially, we actually had more like five or six layers in the game where you would sort of get more information about those guys down there. And sort of also, if that content would have made it into the game, you would also have understood more about their objectives. These guys, the vault bots that are far below. We had to take it out because we simply ran out of cash. It was at one point we just realized is that we're not going to be able to make it if we don't release SteamWorld Dig in the beginning of August, and if it's not a hit, we'll go bust. So, yeah.
And so would you say it was a hit? I mean, it seems like you guys are doing okay.
Yeah. Well, we got lucky. I mean, I think the game is good. And it was really hard for us to assess when we're sort of coming towards the end of the development, because we sort of felt, since we had to omit a bit of content, then we felt that we had been cutting corners a little bit, and we were really afraid that the game wouldn't be coherent, that you wouldn't understand what the world was about, and so we were done in at the end of June 2013, and the game was supposed to come out in early August, and we had sent out only one press release in March about this game, The month of July in Sweden, everybody just goes on vacation in July. It's sort of what we do. So we have like all of July, everybody's off. And then we got back into the office just the last days of July. And I was in really poor shape then, because I hadn't felt like all of July had been one long night where you couldn't catch any sleep and you really needed to sleep. So we finished up at the end of June, and then we all went on vacation in July. And when we got back at work at the end of July, I felt like such a personal failure, because it was my job to sort of do the PR and marketing for the game, and I'd just been involved in writing the game, and then all the guys and girls had done such a great job, I thought. But I thought that the game was just going to go under the radar everywhere because I hadn't done my part. I hadn't been able to just pinpoint the people that I needed to get this game out to. And so we got really lucky when we got back to work, because then the people at Nintendo had also gone on summer vacation, and a lot of key people there had spent the summer playing SteamWorld Dig. And so when we got back, they emailed us and asked if they could sort of highlight the game quite a bit more than usual on the Nintendo Direct. And that sort of game sort of just came slamming in from the side. Nobody had heard about the game almost before we released it. And then it just took off. We were just lucky.
So you'd say Nintendo, that like they really help with it. Like, I mean, you've gone on board saying they help, but it's not just that they talk with you. They've actually had people play your games and everything, and that's where they decide, you know, they want to encourage something that they think is really good.
I think so, and I think also we did a little bit of that job ourselves as well, because I met with them at GDC in 2013, and I had a prototype of the game, and I showed it. And at that point, the game wasn't finished, and it was one of those first moments where I felt that, oh my God, it's like this game. Those guys were sitting next to me, in front of me, playing this game, and I realized that there aren't the gameplay is. You have to sort of sit with the game for an hour or so to sort of immerse yourself and realize that it's really an interesting game. It's if you sit with it for 2-3 minutes, it's just like, oh, okay, right. But then they were sort of hinting at that, sort of off the record, they were telling me that it's this the indie race was really on, that Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo, it was sort of becoming very obvious that they were working really hard to get indies onto their platforms. And so I tried in emails and so on to sort of, okay, well, you have SteamWorld Dig. Can't you make this sort of your indie poster game? Make this your flagship indie effort. And maybe that helped a little. But I think it was that they had a lot of time during the summer to sort of play around with it, and they really liked it, so they decided to make it big.
You did mention, you know, the whole indie race. It seems like they're like, I haven't seen SteamWorld Dig on a Microsoft on Xbox or Xbox One. Have they reached out? And you confirmed your next game isn't going to be on Xbox or Xbox One either. Has Microsoft reached out at all?
Yeah, they have. We've had a lot of good discussions actually with Microsoft, but they were, I'm not sure what it is, if they're very understaffed or if there's very much else going on there, but we've had discussions, and then when I started talking to Sony about the same time I started talking to Microsoft about porting SteamWorld Dig. And Sony was just so much faster to send us the dev kits and so on. And then when Microsoft seriously started talking about this, they realized that we were going to put the game out on the PS4 at a certain date, and there was no way that we would be able to have an Xbox One version of the game on that same date or within a week or so afterwards. It was just, we couldn't do it. So Microsoft was sort of late on stage, and I think their own policies is making it really hard for them to take on SteamWorld Dig. But it's at the same time, we're still talking about it. I really hope that they're going to ease on their standards and instead sort of be open to take on good games, because it seems like their policy now is that if it comes out on PS4, then it has to come out on the Xbox around the same time, and it makes it really hard for their own staff, I think, to be able to keep up with what Sony is doing.
Would you say sorry, I was going to say, would you say these standards are actually making it tough for indies as a whole then?
Yeah, definitely. It's making it tough for maybe every game developer. I mean, if you're very big and you can have and you can run your developments sort of in parallel, then maybe you're not suffering as much. Then you can sort of plan ahead to have everything come out at once. But for us that are so small, like if we were to release onto every platform, if we were to do that, then we're so small that we wouldn't make a good launch on any platform. I think it would be sort of
a hard effort for us to sort of be able to reach out and talk to everyone at the same time. So a staggered release schedule is perfect for us. And I think that sort of rings true for a lot of indie developers. But I think this
Policy that Microsoft has is not only bad for indies. I think it's actually bad for Microsoft as well, because it means that they're sort of eliminating games from their platform that I think a lot of Xbox players would have enjoyed. But again, I mean, we're still talking to Microsoft. I hope we can do it, because I would really love to have SteamWorld Dig out on Xbox One. I think it's a great, great platform.
All right. We are over half an hour. I have one more question I would like to ask, sure. But it's up to you, because it could be a long one.
Oh, don't worry about it. I'm really good. I'm more concerned about you, actually.
Okay. Now, you mentioned earlier that you weren't exactly happy with the state of SteamWorld Dig as you were coming up to launch, like, or at least you guys weren't like too certain of it. I know when I wrote about it on Gamers with Jobs, my impression of it was a perfect sort of polished cycle. You have, like, if any one element of it took too long or was too tedious, then it would break the flow of the game. But the upgrading, the digging, getting back to the surface with the teleporters and stuff, and the constant upgrades, like, to me, it is a perfect cycle that feeds into longer play. Like, you're constantly spending only a little bit of time on each thing and instantly getting feedback. Right. So, what is there that you might think is, I guess, a problem, or what is there in there that, what did you find you needed a lot of time to fix? What did you find you needed a lot of time to sort of adjust and change? Like, how long did you spend, like, polishing this game? Right. And even then, like, what would you change since you weren't sure if it was going to meet this level of polish, or at least it sounded that way?
Right, very good. It's okay, so
I'm sorry, it's a very big question.
No, it is a really good question, because it's the answer is interesting as well. First, I think I agree with you that we think it's polished too. We really wanted to make sure that we released a polished game, but what we thought when we were done was, it was a small sense of defeat that we couldn't afford to put all of the content into the game that we wanted to. And we sort of, whenever we read that in a review on sort of the minus side or the con side, that it's a tad short, it's like, damn it. we had it and we couldn't put it in there. It's like, it has nothing to do with the polish, because I think we couldn't have polished it more. To the game, the way it is, I think we made it as well as we could. But we had a really interesting period in February or March of 2013. We were finally done with it by the end of June, but in February and March, the game wasn't fun, and it was. Obviously, a lot of things came together at the end, but we did something that I thought was quite brave at that point. We decided to not do anything for a week, just to not write any code or not draw any images, but just that everybody had to work really hard on finding the fun factor in the game. And at that time, up until that point, we had avoided the wall jump in the game.
Avoided the which jump?
The wall jump, meaning that you can sort of jump up a vertical shaft if you want to in SteamWorld Dig.
Oh, like the wall jump?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
And we had avoided that because we felt that if we have that mechanic in the game, then how do we stop the player from just drilling down, straight down, vertically, just to make one shaft, then beat the boss and the game is over. It's like, how do we... Okay, so we were sort of trying to fool ourselves into thinking that it was a good idea to have intelligent digging, meaning that you had to zigzag your way down, because we didn't want to implement a wall jump like that. And we called it intelligent mining or something to ourselves, that you had to sort of always think of how you were digging. Otherwise you wouldn't be able to get yourself back up. And it just turned out to be very tedious. But since we hadn't come up with an antidote for this, or we hadn't come up with an idea how to stop people from just digging straight down, we thought it was the only way to do it. And it was just too tedious. The game wasn't fun to play. And during that week, we came up with a lot of good design ideas that actually turned the game into like you said, a really, really interesting cycle. So what came into the game at that point was the wall jump, and then also all of the caves where you pick up your upgrades and so on. Before that, in February, March, they were sort of lying around and you could pick them up. But now you have to sort of go into pre-designed caves and find them. And I think that's when the game really started to get interesting. I have an analogy on that. It was when we made Anthill, it was a small thing that made that game great. And if you ever look at that game, it's like you have your Anthill sort of center screen, and then you have insects coming in from the sides from different spawn points. And in the beginning, or for a long time while we were making Anthill, these insects, they would just be coming straight at you, sort of walking exactly in a straight line. And it was you knew exactly how to send out your bomber ants to bomb those insects. And you also knew exactly when they were going to arrive. But then our lead programmer, he decided to just experiment with putting in erratic walking patterns on these attacking insects, meaning that every so often this insect has to decide if it's going to go 15 degrees left straight on or 15 degrees right. And it made that game great. It was that very small thing where that insect is coming towards the anthill the whole time, but he's not walking in a straight line. He's walking exactly like an insect. And it was scary, and it was real, and it just turned the game, that little decision there or idea turned it into a super great game instead of something that would have been tedious. So it was the same with SteamWorld Dig, that, and I was wearing my nerves outside of my shirt at that point, because we were sort of running out of cash, and we were sort of thinking to ourselves that we'll be done by the end of May. It ended up taking a month longer, but instead of having a mediocre game, I think SteamWorld Dig turned out to be a really, really great game.
And it paid off, and that is true. The caves actually do help break things up, where it focuses more on the platforming than the digging.
Yeah, so it's that's one of the things that came about then. It was actually quite a few more things, but the caves and that, just that abandoning that that thing that we thought was true, that we really had to have this intelligent digging, meaning that you had to go zigzag down. Those two things, the caves and that, that we gave up on that, it was, that sort of proved pivotal for the game.
All right, that was my interview with Brian that I had last year. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope there was some information in there that you found enlightening about the development of SteamWorld Dig. And that's what I think I discovered in this whole process. I do like to to speak with developers about game development and everything, but the kind of things I like to discuss might not always make the best features. So I'm trying to work out where I can go as a writer and as a YouTuber and podcaster with that I can try and bring that element to what I do. But anyway, for more information about Image and Form Games and all of their products, just go to imageform.se. That is not imageandform.se. It is imageform.se. So go there, find out information about SteamWorld Dig, their past games that you might not have heard of, and also check out any information on their upcoming game, SteamWorld Heist. It looks like a very interesting combination of side-scroller and tactical game, like XCOM kind of a thing. It looks really cool, and it's really interesting to know that it is so far ahead chronologically than SteamWorld Dig in this big story they're trying to construct. And at the same time, you can go and check out the intro and outro music is by Steam Powered Giraffe. They wrote the song prepared for boarding for the game SteamWorld Heist, so you can check them out at steampoweredgiraffe.com. As for me, if this is your first time listening to the Ramblecast, I would recommend you go back and check out some of our past episodes. Recent episodes I would recommend going back and listening to would be the YouTube, Twitch, and Let's Plays, the future of all that in gaming. That was our episode from April 19th that had Sean Sands from Games with Jobs in it. The Japanese games industry, the current state of it, that was for April 5th. That had my friend Joey and that had Jerry. He's a regular on here. I recommend listening to that episode. That was a really good one. Our Norwood Film Club, our film discussion on the movie Fight Club from March 1st, that was a really good discussion. And as far back, I mean, Christmas Wishlist 2014 between me, my friends Jerry and Wesley, that was a really good discussion. So I'd say, you know, if you want to familiarize yourself with the podcast, those are the episodes to go to. You can find the Ramblecast on iTunes or go to www.gamertag.net and you'll find links to about everything I do. You'll find there's a podcast category that you can check and you'll see all the Ramblecast episodes. You'll find links to the RSS feed for the Ramblecast there. I write about games. I just put one up about the indie game release called Turin, analyzing its mechanics and looking into its narrative themes and how those themes tie into the mechanics. And you can also find in the show notes on that website for this episode, you'll find the original link to the write-up I did of SteamWorld Dig on Gamers with Jobs, which also kind of went into the cycle of depression and potential threat of addiction to a game, too. It was a very interesting time to discuss SteamWorld Dig. And you can also find links to my YouTube channel, RamblePack64, youtube.com/user/RamblePack64. I have a lot of in-depth videos in there discussing games like The Walking Dead, Remember Me, DMC Devil May Cry, and even discussing, even going back to my earliest episode of Mega Man X, just looking more in-depth at games. So I hope you check that out. And again, check out, if you're a regular listener that doesn't know anything about Image of Form, SteamWorld Dig, SteamWorld Heist, check that stuff out. And if you're interested in what is very interesting, unique combinations of rock, country, and other genres, check out Steam Powered Giraffe. All right, so thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed. Again, sorry I couldn't edit it as much as I wanted to, but I think the discussion was really interesting, and I hope to have Brian back on again in the future. All right, so thank you very much.